Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning. I'm so sorry, everybody. We just had a couple technical difficulties, but welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, I want to suggest you send me an email if you have any questions or comments. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Today, wow, I am so blessed. I got to speak with so many wonderful guests earlier about dyslexia. And now I'm going to be a wonderful guest. His name is Willard Wiggin. He creates micro sculptures that you can't see through the naked eye. They're like the inside of a head of a pin. And he takes hours, months, to make these creations. He has to meditate. He has to, like, really get in the zone. But now he's, like, been recognized all over the globe. And also we're going to be talking with a watchmaker later in the show that he's collaborating with, where his works will be inside a watch. So good morning, Willard. Thank you so much for calling in the show today. Willard, are you still there? Can you hear
me? Morning, Joy.
Hi. Okay. I didn't know if you could hear me.
Yeah, okay. Hey, Joy.
Okay, great. So let's start off with the ants. Talk to the audience about the ants and what's going on with the ants.
How can you now, Joy? Can you hear me?
Yes.
How can you let him?
Okay, so I can hear you. So what I wanted to talk about the ants, how you started working with the ants.
That came about from an early age, you know, when I was age five, you know. It was quite difficult for me at school because, you know, academically I wasn't very good. I couldn't express myself. My school teacher used me as an exhibit of failure just because I couldn't spell my name. She took me around the school and showed all the kids my exercise book and told them that if they don't listen to her, that they'd become me. I was the product, you know, they'd become. So I used to have gone from school, you know. What made me do this? I was in the back garden. I didn't have to run too far away. I didn't live too far from the school. So I couldn't cope with it because all the kids were making fun of me and stuff. So that was it. I ran away quite a few times, hid in the garden. And we used to have this little dog, a Jack Russell, you know, and he was always digging holes in the ground and, you know, messing around. And all these ants came out the ground, and I thought the ants were homeless. So I got upset because I kept thinking, you know, the ants would have nowhere to live and the queen ant would be homeless. So, you know, all the little baby ants would have nowhere to live. So I started making houses for ants. It was one of those things that I did because, you know, when you're a kid, you live in a little fantasy world. You see all these little fairy tales, stories of, you know, the queen ant. And I just kept thinking that, you know, they needed somewhere. So I got my dad's razor blade, broke a little piece of razor blade and sliced up these little splinters of wool.
Yeah. I think we're losing you in and out. Let me see. I think we're losing you a little bit. Can you still hear me?
Yeah. Have you got there?
I can hear you. I didn't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you, John. I can hear you.
Okay. So I read that your mom really was a great inspiration for you. Yeah. Can you hear me? Oh, gosh. I think.
Yeah, I can hear you, John.
Okay. No, I was saying I think that I read that your mom was a great inspiration to you for helping push you along to create these smaller and smaller works.
Yeah, well, when my mother saw what I'd made, you know, when she saw the little houses I'd made for the ants and the little ladders and things and little carousels and all these little things, she was so amazed. She told me the smaller my work, the bigger my name had become, you know, and told me I was really good. Even my next-door neighbor said I was good. The little kids in the neighborhood said I was good. And that's all I needed. When I heard the word good, I went on this journey to become the greatest micro artist that ever lived.
Definitely. Well, I think you've reached that point. Now, I had Susan Raymond on earlier, and she made the film Journey into Dyslexia. And how did you guys connect? Did she call you, or you called her, or how did you find out about the film?
She called me.
Were you nervous? Yeah. Were you nervous about sharing the story?
Well, you know, I'm getting a little bit more confident because I have this condition, and I think it's good to share it with the world, you know, because you can inspire other kids that may have the same condition. So it's sometimes it's good to, you know, sort of let people know that, you know, that you can succeed even though you have it, you know?
Yeah. So now what types of materials do you like to work with? I read about, like, sand and gold and, I mean, even you made a chocolate egg. Talk to me about the different materials that you use.
Yeah, well, you know, I can take a grain of sand, you know, from the beach, smaller than a period stop in a newspaper, and chisel it away and make a church, you know. I used a little broken shard of diamond, which I inserted into a little tool which I made from a pearl drill. And it's sort of a very fine shard of diamond, and I just chipped away using my pole to the jackhammer and carved this little church. I even hollowed out the sand and made little windows there so you could actually see the windows. It was quite a painstaking task. But the end result is, you know, when I finish and people's jaws dropping on the ground and just disbelief, you know, that's my pleasure. It's a pain, it's a nightmare to do it, but it's a dream when I finish, you know.
So now you're working with a watchmaker, and how did you meet Stefan Forsey, Grubel and Forsey? How did you hook up with them?
Well, it was what actually happened about three and a half years ago, and they contacted me through the internet because basically they saw my work, so they wanted to do a co-creation
And now,
with a piece of artwork that would be inserted inside one of their watches, you know. So it was a 3-year plan, you know, to actually do this thing. It was that they were thinking about it, and then they contacted me, and at first I didn't quite understand what it was all about. You know, I thought, you know, my work inside a watch, because you need the right optics to do it, you know, because my work is so small, you know, you're talking 20, 35 microns or 60 microns, you know, it's invisible. So I'm thinking, well,
right,
the only way that I could see this is make it slightly bigger. And they, you know, to create this watch, and they met me. I went to London, met them in London, we sat around the table, and we, you know, we decided to come up with this idea to make this same piece, which is more or less like wearing a Willard Wigan gallery on your wrist, you know, a museum.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Totally unique.
Well, one of the things is that you said you were like a kid in a candy store because all the cool equipment they had.
Yeah. You know, when I went down to the company in Switzerland and I saw all the equipment, you know, which they used to make the watches, I mean, they're all, you know, engineers, you know, they're the best watchmakers in the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Their watches take anything up to 1 year to make a watch, you know. And, you know, you have a team of people, you know, experimenting on these watches. They're so amazing, you know.
Well, what is the most difficult part of your creation process? Is it just sitting alone for long periods of time? Do your hands cramp up? What's, like, the most difficult?
Well, the difficult thing is, you know, sometimes I have to watch my diet. I have to work, you know, a certain time of the night. I have to sort of work between my heartbeat. I have to make tools very, very fine, very sharp. You know, there's all different types of tools that I make. Each tool serves a different purpose. And, you know, having to sort of squeeze my fingers together to avoid the tremors from the pulse, you know, holding my breath. And also, sometimes I have to make sure that I don't inhale my own work. Because,
oh, my God.
But my work, it's very, very strong, you know, because of the forces between atoms. It just, they don't break down. It's just, there's no mass. It's just pure pound for pound strength. You know, when you get a piece of gold that is, you know, chiseled into a shape of something that can be recognized, or, you know, or a person, or, you know, it defies a lot of explanation to a lot of people because they can't believe that something so small can be so detailed. But this is the 50 years of believing, you know, in myself, you know, having to overcome this difficulty, that this condition that I had, my mother's words, legacy of my mother driving me, the smaller my work, the bigger my name, you know, and this has made me who I am today.
One of the cool things I like, when you were in the movie, Susan Raymond's movie, you talked about stealing the microscope. Could you tell the audience about that story?
Could you say that again?
You stole the microscope from the teacher in school.
I wanted to know if you could tell the
audience about that crazy story.
I'll cut the story short. You know, my science teacher, I asked him a question, you know, because they were asking kids questions. And one of the questions were, how does a caterpillar turn into a butterfly? And I put my hand up, and my science teacher turned around to me and said, my brain is smaller than the caterpillar's brain. You know, you waste that question on me, Wigan. Keep your mouth shut. So I was so upset, but I looked on the table, I saw a microscope. So I saw that microscope, and in my head, I thought, you know, I wouldn't advise any kid to do this, but I did at the time. I thought, if my brain is smaller than the caterpillar's brain, it's going to be big enough to steal that microscope. So I took the microscope, and I wanted to do that because I knew that was going to be my journey. So I took the microscope, hid it at the bottom of the playground, waited for school to end, and went in the back, took it, put my hand underneath the fence, and ran home and showed it to my mother. My mother looked at it and said, where'd you get that from? And I said, a gentleman up the road gave me this microscope. She said, I'd love to thank him. Where is it? And I said, I don't know. He gave it me. So the next day I went back into school. All the kids had to sort of stand up in the assembly room because they found out this microscope had been stolen. So I was standing there, you know, I had little skinny legs and short trousers, a little afro, you know, and all the kids who were standing there, you know, and the headmaster said, right, we do know what we're gathered here for. One of you boys have stolen the microscope out of Mr. Rowley's office. Which one of you boys? So I was like standing there, and he was walking down the line. Smith, is it you? Turner, is it you? Lockley, is it you? Roberts, is it you? Whitcomb, is it you? Yeah. And he came to me, and he says, Wigan, I know it's not you. You would not have him for a microscope.
Oh, my God.
Did that.
Let me see if I can, I'm going to reach out to Stefan Forsey. And I wanted to, how long have you worked on the watch?
It's been 3.5 years.
Wow.
It's been 3.5 years of development. And, you know, it's been a painstaking journey to actually come up with this end result. But now we have a prototype, working prototype, which is amazing.
Wow, that's awesome. Because, I mean, usually what does it take you, like 6 months or something?
Well, not to make one of the pieces. Sometimes it can take me anything from 6 weeks, 5.5 weeks to 2 months. It depends on what it is. It's sometimes you can, a sculpture can look slightly easier, but it can turn out to be harder. You know, it's like human beings. You know, you can't underestimate what's going to happen. It's just, it's like how long is a piece of string sometimes.
Well, I'm going to try to reach him. I'm calling him now. Let's see. I'm going to add him over to the conference. We're using this Skype here, and hopefully he will answer. Now, some of their watches I saw cost like $400,000. And your pieces are what, between like $22,000 and $50,000 a piece?
And more. They're,
and more, right?
Hello? You know,
hello?
You know, hello?
Hi, this is Joy Keys from America and Willard Wigan. This is Stefan?
Yeah, that's right. It's Stephen here. Yeah, great to talk to you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do the call today.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Your watches are beautiful. I mean, just like I'm drooling when I was looking at the pictures. I was like, wow, can I come to your studio and watch you work and create?
No problem. Anytime. Anytime.
When I'm in the neighborhood, I'll stop by.
Yep, that sounds great. That sounds great. I expect it because Willard's, you've got Willard with you as well, too, online, I think.
Yeah.
Yep.
Willard.
Hello, Stephen. How are you, Steve? Can you hear me?
Hey, Willard. I'm very good. Yes, I can hear you. Yeah. How was your trip? You good?
It was good. It was good. Weather's nice compared to England.
Well, you guys, let me just keep the thing moving here. I want to talk to Stefan first. Now, you guys are recognized, Grubel and Forsey, for this double tourmaline. Can you talk to the audience about what that means? Stephen, can you still hear me?
Hello?
Hello? Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay,
so I was asking about the double tourmaline and the watches. Could you explain to the audience about that?
Of course, yeah. So the double tourbillon, the name originally is a French word coming from whirlwind, and it's a mechanism which is very much a visual mechanism for us when we first look at it as a non-connoisseur. But for the watchmaker, it's a very important mechanism to enable us to improve the performance of the mechanical watch. And a double tourbillon enables us, as we developed with Robert and myself, and came up and invented this new system, that enables us to take the precision of the mechanical watch to another level, which is very interesting for the collector and for us in our pursuit of getting perfect timekeeping without using electronics and batteries and so on.
They're so beautiful. You have different types of bands and I think we lost Willard. Let's see, he came back on.
Okay.
I think we lost Willard. Willard, hello?
I'm still here.
Okay, well, we'll continue to talk with you. I'll try to reach out to Willard again. But so now, how did you connect with Willard? You contacted him? He said you saw some of his works online or somewhere?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we saw, first up, we saw his work online and were completely blown away by the impact of it. His microscopic dimension, as you've probably been able to see now, working on his sculpture in the eye of a needle, it's absolutely incredible. You know, it's something for us. We work in a miniature scale, So with a timepiece and a watch which you're going to put on your wrist. But Willard is down in another scale, even smaller than that. Mm-hmm. Like working within one of the components of our watch. And so this was what spurred Robert and myself on to get in touch with Willard. And Robert had a first meeting to share a little bit of our work for Global Forcey and to see some of Willard's work firsthand. And, a friendship struck up between us. And that gave us the inspiration for Robert and myself to invite Willard to join us on this adventure.
So now, when is the final watch going to come out?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, you know, it doesn't help much, but when it's finished. But you know, it's a project we've been working on since we first, started working with Willard. It's nearly 4 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
So we're a long way along the road. And we have very recently showcased in Paris at the FIAC, the International Contemporary Art Fair, the work in progress on this project, which if you see a picture, it looks finished. But it's for us, it's a long way from finished because we still have lots of details. And, you know, it's an artistic work. So it's never really finished in our minds. You know, there's this vision of what we want. And so we're each time improving and going forward to really achieve the final result we're looking for. But I should think the next stage is going to be coming up. You know, it's a question of months now more than years. So
mm-hmm.
I guess a little idea.
Well, unfortunately, I've been trying to get Willard back, and he's been trying. I see he was trying to call me. I'm not sure. Let's see if I can try to get him again. I'll try to call James again. Sometimes technology is not like the best.
I was quite worried as well because I'm down here in Switzerland now. So, you know, to make sure that there's a line every time, you know, it's always a bit tricky. So.
Yeah, no, you sound great, and I can hear you. I see people in the chat room listening, and hopefully people are listening
great.
Online. I'm so happy that you guys are collaborating because it's really innovative, his work inside of a watch. I mean, his work alone is innovative and just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't believe how he does that in the tiny inside of a head of a needle. But then to put it inside the watch, and I saw the video that you guys created showing just the process and the working together. So I think
that gives some visual insight to the whole process we've been working on.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, if you've seen Willard's work, is usually installed with a microscope, which is like one foot high, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a pretty big installation. And so very early on, for Robert and myself, we thought, you know, perhaps there is a chance that we can do something